Chapter 44. Takes his broom under his arm, and leads the way, passing deftly with his bare feet over the hard stones, and through the mud and mire. Cook's Court. Joe stops. A pause. Who lives here? Him what give him his writing, and give me half a bull, says Joe in a whisper without looking over his shoulder. Go on to the next. Crook's house. Joe stops again. A longer pause. Who lives here? He lived here, Joe answers as before. After a silence he is asked, in which room? In the back room up there. You can see the winder from this corner. Up there. That's where I see him stretched out. This is the public house, where I was took to. Go on to the next. It is a longer walk to the next, but Joe, relieved of his first suspicions, sticks to the forms imposed upon him, and does not look round. By many devious ways, reeking with offense of many kinds, they come to the little tunnel of a court, and to the gas lamp lighted now, and to the iron gate. He was put there, says Joe, holding to the bars and looking in. Where? Oh, what a scene of horror! There! Says Joe, pointing. Over yonder, arm on them piles of bones, and close to that there kitchen winder. They put him worry nigh the top. They was obliged to stamp upon it to get it in. I could unkiver it for you with my broom, if the gate was open. That's why they locks it, I suppose, giving it a shake. It's always locked. Look at the rat, cries Joe, excited. Hi, look. There he goes. Ho! Into the ground. The servant shrinks into a corner of that hideous archway, with its deadly stains contaminating her dress, and putting out her two hands, and passionately telling him to keep away from her, for he is loathsome to her, so remains for some moments. Joe stands staring, and is still staring when she recovers herself. Is this place of abomination consecrated ground? I don't know nothing of consequential ground, says Joe, still staring. Is it blessed? Which? Says Joe, in the last degree amazed. Is it blessed? I'm blessed if I know, says Joe, staring more than ever, but I shouldn't think it warn't. Blessed? Repeats Joe, something troubled in his mind. It ain't done it much good if it is. Blessed? I should think it was tothered myself. But I don't know nothing. The servant takes as little heed of what he says as she seems to take of what she has said herself. She draws off her glove to get some money from her purse. Joe silently notices how white and small her hand is, and what a jolly servant she must be, to wear such sparkling rings. She drops a piece of money in his hand without touching it, and shuddering as their hands approach. Now, she adds, show me the spot again. Joe thrusts the handle of his broom between the bars of the gate, and with his utmost power of elaboration, points it out. At length, looking aside to see if he has made himself intelligible, he finds that he is alone. His first proceeding is to hold the piece of money to the gas light, and to be overpowered at finding that it is yellow gold. His next is to give it a one-sided bite at the edge as a test of its quality. His next, to put it in his mouth for safety, and to sweep the step and passage with great care. His job done, he sets off for Tom All Alone's, stopping in the light of innumerable gas lamps, to produce the piece of gold, and give it another one-sided bite as a reassurance of its being genuine. The mercury in powder is in no want of society tonight, for my lady goes to a grand dinner and three or four balls. Sir Leicester is fidgety down at Chesney Wold, with no better company than the goat. He complains to Mrs. Rouncewell that the rain makes such a monotonous pattering on the terrace that he can't read the paper even by the fireside in his own snug dressing room. Sir Leicester would have done better to try the other side of the house, my dear, says Mrs. Rouncewell to Rosa. His dressing room is on my lady's side. And in all these years I never heard the step upon the ghost's walk more distinct than it is tonight. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.